You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development and the United Nations Non-Governmental Liaison Service.
So yeah, I'm going to present a joint work with Marcela Urraca. Basically, we do a case study of Tumin, which is a local complementary currency that is used in Espinal, a community in Mexico. So a brief overview of our paper. The purpose was to analyze the emergence of Tumin, its effectiveness for solving the economic problems in Espinal, and its potential to transform the relationships of the inhabitants of the community. So our conclusions are based on fieldwork. We went there and we did interviews, questionnaires, and focal groups. And we find that although Tumin seems to be ineffective in having an economic impact in the community, its potential as an instrument to empower the community, to strengthen relationships, and to promote the cooperation and mutual help is very important. So we did a contrast between theory and empirics, as Jerome Blanc was saying, and we're not trying to identify the blind spots, but we are trying to identify the difficulties they faced and in implementing it, and also the positive impacts it has had. So an outline of what I'm going to say. First, I'm going to talk about the emergence of Tumin. Then I'm going to say a few things about its economic and social impact, to finally mention some difficulties, implications, and further thoughts. So where did Tumin emerge? So Espinal is a very small community, less than 3,000 inhabitants. And we're basically, to contextualize, we just need to know that poverty prevails. So intermediaries hoard a big proportion of the profits from medium-scale production of citrus fruits, which is the main economic activity. And I would like to highlight that workers are not used to work collaboratively. And society-wise, the relationship between inhabitants does not seem to be very close nor based on trust. And it is unusual to see experiences of participation. So why did Tumin emerge? So as Lee Tyre beautifully illustrated it, there was this emerges a response to what some teachers from the Intercultural University of Veracruz diagnosed as a problem of scarcity of money whilst there was abundance of richness. So they wanted to facilitate the exchange in a place where there was both demand and supply of products. So the system was, of course, designed to stimulate economic activity, but it was also made as a sociological bet to construct solidarity among people, and also as a political bet to question the prevailing system and to reinforce the importance of currencies as a medium of exchange rather than something with an intrinsic value. So how does it work? I just want to tell you briefly. So to become members, producers of goods and services have to go to the House of Tumin and declare that they want to be members. And in exchange, they're given a directory with all the members and 500 tumins, which are actually papers. And tumin and pesos are 1-to-1, the exchange rate. And so they may spend these 500 tumins in any business that appears in the directory. And if they just want to stop participating, they just have to give back the 500 tumins, and that's it. And they commit to accepting at least 10% of the price of their products. If somebody wants to pay them in tumins, they commit to accept at least 10% of the price. So I would like to highlight three characteristics. So first, it's complementary, so it's 10% of the price, more or less. Then a balance is required where every member should have around 500 tumins, because too many tumins indicates that you're not spending enough in local products, and because this wants to stimulate economic activity, it would be important. And too few tumins indicates that the member is not being productive for the community. And thirdly, only producers participate. So the poorest people and the employees are automatically excluded from the system. Regarding the economic impact, it has just been mild. Some people do say that there are new products, namely honey, crafts, but the economic impact has been mild. It seems that local production cannot entirely fulfill Espinal's demand for industrialized products. So tumins are getting accumulated in large grocery stores. So as we understand it, tumin is a mechanism that stimulates the demand through a 10% reduction in prices. But the lack of circulation of tumins shows that there is a shortage of supply. So the natural response would be to have inflation, but because tumin and pesos are pegged, there cannot be inflation, but there is a disequilibrium. So this is translating into tumins getting accumulated in the big stores. So this, of course, has mined the effectiveness of the instrument, because members of big grocery stores have to abandon the project because they cannot pay their own providers with tumins. So it therefore seems that the diagnostic of the problem was incomplete. The low income levels was not only a problem of a means of exchange, but there were also problems on the supply side that have to do perhaps with disadvantageous integration to the market, with low productivity of producers. And there also seems to be a disequilibrium between the products that are locally produced and locally demanded. So it is important to mention that the usefulness of Tumin is limited because the problems that remain unattended are out of the scope of a local currency, we believe. Regarding the social impact, it has been, we consider, much more important. It has indeed facilitated the interaction between people who do not normally interact because they belong to different social classes. It has improved trust between fellow members, and it has created a sense of mutual help, which of course has created a sense of union and of identification within a group. So hence, the notion of community and identity of Espinal has been strengthened, and it has fostered local pride. People do feel proud about Espinal having created this instrument that they only use. And also members mentioned that compared to before using Tumin, they feel they can change their own situation more than before, so it shows some potential for empowering people. And I would also like to mention, Marie Fair elaborated much more on this, but we do consider that Tumin may be considered as a re-territorialization of currencies. And the benefits of its territorial basis, on one hand, its particular bond to a territory strengthens its potential to promote local identity and reciprocity because people feel that they are locally managing the local resources. And on the other hand, it is also a way we consider to recognize that Mexico is a multicultural society, and by linking this instrument to the local dynamics of a specific territory, well, this diversity can be reflected. So some implications. We found that the lack of penetration limits the potential a lot. There are few members who use it very seldom, and there's a sense of confusion and ignorance of people how they can belong to this project. People also abandon Tumin, as I mentioned, and this is like a vicious circle, because if people abandon, because the Tumin is just based in trust, if they abandon, then I don't trust that this instrument is going to be useful in the future. And also, it is very important to remark that a generalized distribution of system has not yet been found, so employees cannot use Tumins. And besides, local authorities are uninvolved and also misinformed, while the federal government, like the Mexican Central Bank, has sued the promoters of Tumin because, legally the only authorized institution to print currency is the Central Bank. So although the promoters of Tumin or the coordinators are not worried about this, we found that it indeed hampers a lot the project because people should trust in the instrument, and we felt that there was a sense of fear among members. So a related challenge is the appropriation of the project, because this was created by the teachers of Intercultural University of Veracruz, so people don't feel the project as theirs, and they feel that it belongs to a small group. Also, it seems that by using Tumin, people are not agreeing to accept a different measure of value, but they use it to complement the price of products. And therefore, there is a risk that Tumin works only as a promotion of consumption and complicating its transformation into a solidarity project. However, I would like to remark that regarding consumption patterns, the members of Tumin do mention that they prefer to buy each other because I like to help my fellow member of Tumin. So that is changing. So perhaps that's in this sense. And we consider that children and teenagers are a very important area of opportunity to improve the outreach of Tumin because they all know about Tumin and they feel proud that only Espinal uses it, but they don't exactly know how it is used. So we believe that perhaps if at school they learn how to use Tumin, they could teach their parents and then this could expand. And moreover, because the most important or the most difficult we consider part of solidarity economy in general is to transform the values and the values that underlie economic transactions, perhaps if children at elementary school learn the potential of solidarity, then this could translate into a much more long-run benefit if the values are changed since younger. Also, we consider that it has a lot of potential through promoting the organization among individuals. So to the extent that Tumin encourages relationships of trust and favors organization of Espinal's inhabitants, then its potential of catalyzing economic and like social change will be boosted. So although right now economically there haven't been too many changes, perhaps if they start to organize and work collaboratively, perhaps in cooperatives, that could bring indeed a benefit. So I would like to finish saying that Tumin seems to be ineffective in solving in itself Espinal's economic problems, but it is a process and not a point of arrival, and it is an example of a response to worrisome economic and social situations, and this has an intrinsic value on its own. So its process of emergence like empowers individuals and it fosters a sense of identity. So I believe that that's something very positive and that we should keep in mind.
Great, wow, thank you. Super, such energy, you've woken me up big time. Thank you. Other presentations are very exciting too, but but the energy. Yes, our first question at the back there.
I think that one of the most serious problems, my name is David Barkin, I'm from Mexico, and although it is true that the Tumin was started by professors from the university, it was not started with the full participation of their students. And that, I think, was a problem, because basically the Tumin, and I'd like you to comment on this, I invite you to comment on this, as I understand it, the Tumin was created by business people in the community, not by community groups, and that explains the origin of the disequilibria that you're talking about that are creating a great deal of problems. The fact that the money is being accumulated in the supermarket is in itself an indication of a serious structural and social problem, because as I understand it, one of the limitations is that many of the it can't use the money to pay its own employees, because that would be, there are legal problems there, but more importantly, there are social problems and political problems involved with it.
Thank you, David. I'm conscious we only have 5 minutes for questions, okay. And so we're up to 2 minutes on your question. So let's hear a response, and then you can respond to the response as well. So let's have a dialogue on that. A clear challenge to this currency, the way it was designed, and some suggestion there about why it went wrong. What's your response?
Well, as far as they told us, it was not the businessman who started it, it was the teachers. Yeah, so, and yes, not with the full participation, so that's exactly what we found as one of the main problems. And yes, there's a structural problem. I agree completely in that there's like a social and an economics like problem of the disadvantageous integration to the market. And it is true that the Mexican labor law doesn't allow anyone to pay employees with things different than pesos, so it does create political problems. That's true, but of course, like this same thing, like because employees are not part of this system and because they cannot get paid through this, and they cannot either go to the House of Tumin and ask for Tumins because they're not producing anything else, so promoters are worried about having currency that is not backed up, then they are excluded. And then when people want to go to the stores and buy with Tumins, sometimes employees do not accept them because they don't really know how it works and they feel excluded. So of course, this is hampering even worse. Did I respond?
I think there's some important lessons there. It reminds me of some of the problems with business barter systems, where quite a few companies end up with huge positive balances and no one wants to accept them, and things grind to a halt and they feel that they've been hard done by, and they raise serious questions about the ethics of those who are establishing such systems. And so that also brings us back to the need for clarity of purpose, clarity of evaluations, and to basically have a bigger community of people analyzing these things. One question I have, and then I'll go to Jerome, is there must be other complementary currencies in Mexico. Are they all being sued? And if not, then what were the particular characteristics of this one that maybe, you know, we can learn from that, and maybe you can have flourishing of other innovations without being sued?
Well, to my knowledge, like, I don't know any other community currencies. Actually, some people are trying to import Tumin to their own communities. And what made the government sue this? I have no idea. If you go there and you see, like, the scale of the project is really ridiculous, that the government has sued it. Perhaps they knew, they learned about the project, and they're scared about the possible implications.
Okay. So I mean, it is a fiat type currency rather than, say, a mutual credit. I'd be interested to. You have some information on this topic, yes?
Just a question.
And say who you are. I'll come back to you, David. Just
if I understood right, you are not changing the currency, the national currency, for those times. So you are issuing new money. That's the reason why. That's something you are not allowed to do. That's
Well, it's a local fiat currency where they just issue it, but you can issue a currency where it's mutual credit, so everyone in a circle is okay. Self-issuing and collectively recognizing each other's self-issued credit, and all debits and credits add out to zero, and so there's no real money in a sense of a thing which is being transacted. So that's... I would be surprised,
you know,
for example, if there must be time banks in Mexico, and I'd be surprised if anyone's prosecuting someone running a time bank. Anyone know about complementary currencies in Mexico and whether there are time banks and lets and things? David looks like he can contribute on this.
I've been working on this for about 15 years in Mexico, and there are 17 local currencies in Mexico. And there's one that pretends to not be even so local, and it's been around for about 24 years. I don't want to go into the details of that. Four of them are electronic, and they're very, very interesting. To answer a specific question, I believe that the reason why the central bank went after this currency is that it was started by entrepreneurs rather than by people. And they saw that as particularly dangerous because it was designed specifically and very effectively to get around the tax laws. The people using these currencies don't pay the value-added tax, they don't report it as income, and it's an extraordinarily effective way of tax avoidance, if not evasion.
Okay, so that, I think, is a fantastic research question on this one, is to interview the central bankers and the actors, and also compare their views with, say, the Brazilian central bank, who initially sued Banco Palmas and then chose to actually back it and scale it, replicated it across the country. That would be a great thing, and that's good feedback, and we can continue the discussion afterwards, but we do have to move on.
Check out our other podcasts, available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unris.org. Thank you for listening.